The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the MadTech Podcast. This is a special Christmas edition because it's December, we're all very tired. It's day for predictions. What's going to happen in 2024? To discuss 2024 predictions, I'm delighted to be joined by ExchangeWire CEO Rachel Smith. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Lindsay.
Joining us all the way from Australia and yes, all the way from sunny Ireland, ExchangeWire CSO Kieran O'Kane. Hello.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm very well, yeah. We're all in different countries, so this is truly international. And we're here to talk about 2024 predictions. So we're going to go around the room and hopefully we'll come up with two predictions each. Let's see how we go. Let's see what happens. Let's see if this descends into absolute madness. I'm sure it will do. Rachel, I'm going to come to you first. What is your first prediction for 2024?
Well, I feel like it's one that everyone's going to have on their list and it will seem a bit obvious, I'm expecting, to most people. But I'm going to say that 2024 will be the year that there is widespread sort of significant uptick in day-to-day usage of AI tools in everyone's lives, not just those that work in marketing and advertising. But that's then going to accelerate the adoption of AI tools in the context of marketing and advertising. And off the back of what we've already been discussing with people at ATS events around AI this year, I'm thinking principally of Singapore here because that was in beginning of October. I feel like although there is, you know, we're certainly lacking sophistication in terms of how AI tools are used and applied in the context of marketing and advertising. That's not to say that those tools aren't already, that there aren't some tools already in use and there isn't lots of interesting things going on, but it's not terribly sophisticated or wide scale at the moment. But I feel like we're going to see a real boost to that next year, faster than everybody anticipates. And one of the areas where I'm sure we'll start to see fairly wide scale adoption is around, the mechanics of media trading, because that's something that's already happening. It's already underway. And one of the speakers on the panel at ATS Singapore, I can't remember her name. She was with Dentsu, I'm pretty sure, was talking about AI tools already being used in programmatic trading within their agency, and that that's controversial with some clients who are concerned that maybe algorithms are leading trading in certain directions and not in others, and what is that resulting in terms of media execution. But I think that it's going to accelerate faster than we anticipate it will, because already in the 3 months since ATS Singapore, I feel like it's become much more mainstream and widespread. And that just means in general day-to-day life. And that just means that the adoption in this corner of the industry is going to be quicker.
It's interesting. There's always this concern in the media industry. It's not exclusive to media. It's across many industries. But there's this sense of loss of control because we feel we should need to have control over optimization, over what's happening with our campaigns. We're able to tell the client exactly what we're doing and why we're doing it. We're not leaving it up to some kind of black box to sort it all out for us. And I think that, you know, we talked about the saying goodbye to black box advertising, and we're now seeing more control and we're now getting more understanding of what's going on. And we're seeing a return of that. And AI is generating a return potentially of black box advertising and this return of loss of control over what is happening in our campaigns and how we justify what's happening to clients. And I think there's a lot of fear around that. And I remember back in my, even in my paid search days, you know, when the likes of Kenshu and Marion and DC Storm would come in, and the concern was, well, I can't see what's going on if they're optimizing my campaigns for me. And so it's always been this kind of concern when it comes to media. And I think that AI is just going to really accelerate that. Kieran, what are your thoughts on that?
So I think that Rachel's right about the AI piece coming more into the agency's day-to-day activities. I'm already seeing quite a few companies who are offering sort of AI-powered algorithmic trading capabilities, right? Scibids is sort of the tip of the iceberg. It got bought for 150 mil or 120 mil by DV this year. I think that some of the fears are probably overblown. Like, PMax and what's the Meta solution called? Whatever their AI powered stuff on Amazon have, they all have like AI powered solutions. PMax has been at the sort of eye of the storm this year in terms of like transparency and ads being served on erroneous sites. So you'll have that element of that, but you still don't have transparency for our little corner of the world, the 20%ers, right? So I do think that you will still get that transparency, but the training capabilities could be better done by machines, machine learning, right? And I'm going to see more of that. So what does that mean for agencies? I think what happens is you're going to get more power come back to media planner buyers. I think for many years, they've been kind of sidelined by programmatic, right? Like, oh, it's just not a very important function within the agency, but actually it is. So I think these tools are going to empower that subset of the agency world, right? The planner buyer. So I think I'm a bit of an optimist around AI. I don't buy into the whole Skynet nonsense and the, you know, that AI will eat us and we're going to all be unemployed and Elon's in and jobs won't be. It's an enabler, right? It's just a tool, right? It does the stuff that we can't do, right? Boring roads. It's not going to take over the planning function of media. That won't happen. You can't let a machine do all that shit. Like,
you need a human touch, but also I think people won't be able to resist the increase in inefficiency and the time that it gives them back to do other tasks. No. Because, and the reason I say that is because that's how probably everyone on this podcast, everyone listening, has started incorporating use of AI tools in our day-to-day lives. That's exactly why ChatGPT has been so incredibly popular, because you use it, you see what it can do. And the second that you apply it to something practical in your life, you're like, oh, why wouldn't I do that every single time I need to, you know, perform this task or upgrade something? So I don't think we'll be able to resist the efficiency boost. The other thing is, I think the concern about, basically our control issues in the industry, which are wide and varied and quite nuanced as well, but I think a lot of them are cyclical, right? So I was chatting with some agency folks in Singapore when I was there last week, and they were talking about how a lot of the brands they're working with are coming back to this notion of in-housing, you know, and it feels like about 5-6 years ago, we were talking about in-housing or not. And a lot of brands were really keen on in-housing and then discovered that actually it's much more complex than you first imagine. And so they started then leaning back in on their agency partners to assist them with things and to use the expertise they have within their agencies to help optimize, you know, marketing and advertising campaigns, and moved away from the concept of in-housing and thought it was actually a bit better to adopt some kind of hybrid approach. He was saying that a lot of clients are talking to them again about wanting to in-house functions around controlling things like data and data ownership. That's not surprising, because privacy sort of reigns supreme, even in regions where it's not being heavily legislated for. But it made me reflect on the fact that I think we've got a tendency to do this. The second that we see technology outpacing our ability to use it, we start getting a little bit nervous and wanting to control everything. Once we actually allow it to sort of do its thing and sit back a little bit and appreciate the benefits, I think we'll lay off the control button again a bit.
Yeah, I think we're all becoming Luddites in the Industrial Revolution and just kind of terrified of what technology will do for us and what kind of industry will do for us. And actually, there's a lot that it can do for us. It's not negative.
Yeah, that's part of being, in this industry. You need to be comfortable with evolution and this type of sort of like technology advancement. Like you need to embrace it. I think people just always look for the negative. Like that's the other bloody thing this year. Like all the neggies around the place. Like, you know,
The negos.
It has been quite a negative year, actually. It genuinely has. I'm going to not make it negative, and I'm going to move us on from AI. And Kieran, I'm going to ask you for your first prediction for 2024.
Well, I've just gone for a sort of big macro trend for next year, and it's curation. And I know that we're going to be doing a big, we're going to be focusing very heavily on it next year. And I think this has been bubbling in the background for quite some time, right? A lot of the sort of campaigns, so programmatic campaigns, have been done via PMPs, and it's happening more and more. And this year we've seen a bunch of companies sort of emerge in that curation space. So I know that Xandr, who just did a whiteboard session with Microsoft Advertise, should say, formerly known as Xandr.
Apologies
to our Microsoft Advertising fans.
It's like AdTech 2007.
In different guises, they've been sort of like blazing a trail around the curation piece. And IpenWeb, who now are part of Criteo. But like, it's now become really, really apparent to me and to people at ExchangeWire and people in the industry that this is going to be a big trend. It's a shift of sort of like power away from the sell side, or sort of the buy side to the sell side. And I think it comes with a big economic change as well, right? If you think about the last 10 years, most money's been pumped into the open marketplace, right? Via DSP, SSP, that kind of thing. But increasingly, for many reasons, control, economic reasons, PMPs become very popular with the agency people, right? So, and I see more of this happening next year, particularly with, you know, the cookie deprecation on Chrome, third-party cookie deprecation on Chrome. I see more and more of this happening. We're going to see more money shift to curation. And I like it. I'm a big fan of it because I think, as you know, I'm a huge ad network guy. I love ad networks. And indeed, I think this is a way for the ad network model to reemerge in a good way, in not the way it used to be, like the specific media kind of arbitrage the hell out of everything. I think it's a good way for new companies to emerge with really interesting data signals or formats to build businesses. And I'm just thinking about some of the businesses like our friends at Picnic, who are sort of like, you know, they do curation of really interesting sort of clean formats to have high engagement. So I'm just thinking of companies like that they're emerging. And I can think of others as well, Audigent, who sort of were a DMP and kind of have now found themselves at the sort of center of curation, curating deals. Multilocal, another interesting company that kind of like is almost like a sell side MIQ. It's putting these deals together because it's quite difficult. We had Fern in from Multilocal doing a trader talk recently and talking about how they work. And then I just think that more and more we're going to see more companies going this route. And I think the tools are there to scale these deals so that they work. And it's good to see it. I think it's a kind of a new rebirth, if you will, of sort of programmatic execution.
If we're going, if we're seeing a trend and a shift to going more direct and going into more private marketplaces and going down the curation route, what do you think that spells for the future of the open marketplace and also the 20%ers that exist exclusively within the open marketplace as well?
I think the 20%ers are fine. I think this actually empowers the 20%ers more so. What it does, I think you're right. I think open marketplaces challenge massively, right? So people are trying to come up with solutions to make it work. I just don't see how you can make it work. I mean, if we look at Privacy Sandbox next year, to be honest, I'll put my hand up and like everybody else, I don't know enough about Privacy Sandbox, and neither does the industry, because I put out a funny sort of like quip on LinkedIn about how many AI consultants I saw on my feed over the last year. And I haven't seen one Privacy Sandbox consultant. In the meantime, I got a couple of emails about that. Saying, oh, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, but anyway, that's neither. my point is, nobody really knows what that's going to happen. But I suspect that a lot of performance budget will lean into Privacy Sandbox. Like we've seen MIQ announce recently that they are all in on it. Criteo are in it as well. A couple of the RTB big players are in it. So I think that performance piece at the bottom of the funnel will probably go into that. But then mid to upper funnel stuff is going to be difficult because Privacy Sandbox kind of breaks that attribution for that stuff. So I see that money shifting away from open marketplace into PMPs because it's easier to activate. And it is possible to scale it as well. So I'm quite excited about it. I think like for me, it's like there's going to be a bunch of new companies. And it's not all, doom and gloom, particularly around open markets. I just see money shifting to where it's practical, you know?
And do you think as well that, you know, with sort of Google's cookie deprecation deadline of next year, potentially more and more, you know, brands and marketers looking to optimize towards specific metrics, trying to get away from cookies, trying to rely less on IDs even as well. Do you see that that's where curation platforms will play a role, trying to scoop up, you know, the demand for optimizing towards alternative metrics? Yeah.
We had Microsoft Advertising in for another Trade Talk yesterday, and they were talking about how there are signals that you can use.
Didn't you just say that we had Microsoft Advertising in for a Trade Talk?
Yeah, sorry. Somebody Trade Talks the last couple of weeks. I apologize. So,
losing your mind? Go on.
Well, it's the end of the year. We're all losing our mind. Joe was talking about how there are signals that you can use. You can basically use signals beyond third-party cookies and sort of your typical ID signals that we were using previously. And you can use that for curation. And I think that's the thing. People are going to find ways to lean into this. And to Lindsay's point, I think you're going to see more and more deals activate this way, because I think the agencies are going to struggle to make money from the open marketplace. I think it's like it's not going to be economic to kind of to run campaigns through OMP, because for the most part it won't work. And you know, I think that's why we're going to see more and more of these companies pop up. I know that a lot of the SSPs have been investing quite heavily in the curation piece, but yeah, I see a lot of them pushing into this next year. I think this is actually a bigger theme than the like. It's sort of branches across display and TV. I actually could see CTV or TV doing more of this stuff, right? I could see curation deals being more popular with the likes of wall gardens that don't want to have programmatic and get like an open marketplace. Like I'm thinking about ITV or Channel 4 to have very, very strict wall gardens. And that's like, for our listeners in the US, like CTV is not a real thing here. It's not, you don't have masses of inventory in the open marketplace. It is very much PG or PMP. So it extends across to that. And our friends at Lemma in APAC, they're doing quite a bit around out of home, digital out of home. So I think this curation piece is omni-channel, and it's going to be quite exciting where, you know, you're going to see more interesting products, more interesting companies operate.
Interesting. And you mentioned CTV, and that's to bring me on to my first prediction, which is around the CTV space. And just I think that nothing good's going to happen in CTV in 2024 is basically my prediction.
That's your prediction. I feel like brilliant.
It's just a mess that will get messier. And that was only reinforced by the news overnight that Warner Brothers Discovery are making a bid for Paramount that could bring the company to kind of a value of $40 billion or something like that. And just the mess that exists within the CTV market in the US, all in an effort to try to compete with the streamers, the likes of Netflix, Apple, and Disney. And it's just, I mean, will it go through? Will the government, the US government, Biden is notoriously very kind of anti consolidation. So will he actually allow it to happen? But Paramount need help to get out of the situation they're in. Warner Bros. Discovery kind of need more clout to be able to compete with the likes of Comcast and the likes of Apple and Disney and Netflix. It just feels messy. And then, Kieran, you mentioned it yourself, kind of in, you know, when we talk about CTV, it's always talked about with the US lens, but we always forget. And I feel like we have this conversation all the time. It drives me mad that we keep having it. That every single market is different. And in Europe, there isn't really a CTV market. It is all done on a PMP basis. But also at the moment, you know, speaking as a consumer, I feel like it's done really bloody poorly. Like I was watching UK TV Play, which is a VOD channel on my smart TV. And I had to deal with the same Paco Rabanne Christmas fragrance ad, a 7-second ad, 8 times in a row. That I never want to see a Pokemon again. And that wasn't a one-off either. There was one ad break that was 7 seconds, just that one ad. Another ad break was in the same TV show, was 170 seconds. And part of it was that ad playing 8 times. Then another part was a different 20-second ad playing 3 times. And that happened throughout the show, throughout different shows. It's not just UK TV Play I'm calling out. It has some experience on ITV as well. There's so much mess around demand versus supply versus kind of consistency among ad breaks. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of improvements have happened within IAB in 2023 that I think will play out in 2024 quite nicely. But I just still feel like it's really messy, and it's still not well defined. It's still not well, advertisers still aren't buying into CTV in the same way they might buy into linear TV. I just feel like it's messy. Anyone agree with me?
I agree.
It's definitely messy. But don't you think, because we've been talking for at least the last 12, maybe 18 months about the opportunity for some tech innovation in terms of improving the advertising experience in CTV and also making sure that...
It feels like 18 months. Yeah,
there we go. But also, you know, measurement and attribution and tackling fundamental challenges like frequency capping. Like surely there should be some mechanisms to enable that to happen in a CTV environment, because the end result is consumer fatigue, right? And no advertiser wants to be on the receiving end of that. If anyone that works for Paco Rabanne is listening to this podcast, they will be phoning their agency immediately going, what the fuck?
They'd be fuming if they experience what I experienced. And also Jean-Paul Gaultier was another victim of this If they experience what I experienced, they'd be absolutely raging. They really would be.
So I sort of feel like this is an area that's ripe for tech innovation. And Kieran, surely you've got some ideas on this.
I do. I think that I think that we've got two stories here, right? Of what I call CTV Plus or whatever.
True.
You call it.
Yeah.
There's a US story, which then generally becomes the global story. And the US story is very different from the UK and Irish or European or APAC story, right? APAC's another different bag of crazy cats.
Like APAC is fascinating.
But let's focus on probably LATAM and Europe, which kind of have similar sort of viewing habits, right? Large players that own quite a lot of the attention in terms of, like, you know, TV viewing, right? So you take the UK, for instance, like, because it's the market we operate in. Four companies control most of the engagement, right? And I'm taking out Netflix, because obviously Netflix and Disney Plus are sort of the incumbents, or sorry, not the incumbents, the new arrivals. But you think about ITV, right? Which is the big player in the market, right? Like, they're not buying into this whole open marketplace. I need an SSP and a DSP, right? They're doing direct integrations, right? And I think that the innovation I think we need to see is the stuff that Lindsay just pointed out. I think it's going to be targeting and measurement, and then probably stuff like, you know, I'm going to mention Lightbox, because I think they're an interesting UK-based business who sort of who operate as a meta planning layer above all that. So because they're not in the business of arbitraging ITV inventory or anything else, they can work with the agencies and to kind of access inventory all over the place for planning and activation, and then you can plug in your data sources. I think that I think that ad tech has got it wrong around this. They're just in this, particularly in this part of the world, they're not going to be able to sandwich themselves into the middle of it. They keep talking about it. Video was big here, right? Video was huge in Europe, right? So I don't know if that's been slopped in with the CTV argument, but it just feels to me that it's going programmatic, but not programmatic as you know it, right?
No.
Not your typical open marketplace or to be enabled. Or you still have an RTP signal, but it's effectively a direct integration into the ad server, right, from DSP. It's just using data and pushing the ad to the audience it wants to buy, right? And I think that some ad tech companies are going to find it difficult to get in the door here, right? And believe it or not, I think that curation is going to be a good one. I'm going to refer back to one of the companies that we've been dealing with, Nexon, who are an amalgamation of many, many different brands. But they seem to take the right idea around using their own inventory for curation purposes, because they've got, you know, CTV. And I think that's the way in. But it's not going to be the crock of gold that people think it is in this part of the world. There are certainly opportunities, lots of opportunities, but not... It's not going to mirror the world of display advertising.
No, definitely not. I'm going to move us on, because Kieran's got a breakfast deadline. He's got to get down to breakfast before they close up in his hotel. Rachel,
breakfast deadline.
I would hate to miss that. Rachel, what is your second prediction, please?
So I'd prepared three and I was just tossing up in my mind which one I would choose for number two. I'm going to go with a change of gear and the prediction I'm going to, you know, discuss with you guys, see what you think, is about made for advertising sites. So low quality, fraudulent, made for advertising sites. I feel like 2024 might be the year that we could potentially really knock those on the head. Privacy, you know, drivers, a deprecation of third party cookies, are going to make it harder and harder, hopefully, for those sites to make money off advertising. And I just feel as though the world's attention is on, you know, certainly advertisers, brands and advertisers' attention more than ever before is on where their money is going and what kind of sites they're advertising on. And I just wonder if we might be entering a period of time where the mechanics of the way that digital advertising works makes it harder and harder for those fraudulent sites to actually make money. And it would be really good if that happened. Obviously, no one wants to see the continued proliferation of MFAs, made for advertising sites, but also because I think it plays into this notion that publishers are in a more powerful seat. The closer that we veer towards cookie deprecation deadlines and this notion that brands and marketers are looking for high quality advertising opportunities and they want to be more and more sure of what it is that they're buying, that advertising value chain is shortening for a number of reasons, because brands want to be certain about what they're buying and they want full transparency, but also for reasons of environmental sustainability, et cetera. Maybe all of those things are, coalescing, coinciding to create an environment where made for advertising sites might eventually start to dwindle and disappear. Could be a Pollyanna prediction.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different, you're right, there's a lot of different things coming together that will kind of almost force them out. And it's like, it is the whole transparency, data privacy, the way in which publishers are trying to diversify revenue in healthy ways, in positive ways, rather than, you know, relying on crappy companies, I won't mention any names, that kind of that are negating their advertising experience. It could actually make these MFAs become legitimate publishers that have actual interesting news on them, rather than just like farms for crappy advertising. And also, as you mentioned, sustainability, there's a lot of different things coming together here that could just render these irrelevant. That and the consumer, and, you know, my predictions around the consumer, so I'll come on to that. But I think there's a lot of different things that come together that could say goodbye to them. But there's also this constant chase of revenue. And as long as there's money at the end of the rainbow, will that be enough? Will those things be enough to stop the likes of MFA, given how much revenue they generate for these companies? Kieran, what are your thoughts?
So I think this kind of joins nicely with my prediction around curation. I think that curation could kill a lot of that, because open marketplace is basically, you know, DSPs, algos optimizing towards specific KPIs, right? So that's what these MFA sites have fed on. Right, you know, viewability, CTRs. So, like, you know, the spin up of an MFA is pretty simple. I, you know, you can build slideshows, you can just populate it with it, buy like traffic, and then and then basically arbitrage. It's really not difficult. But why they've become so such a sort of draw for spend is that those DSP algos are optimized towards those KPIs, and the MFA sites have kind of absolutely minted it. So I think in the world of curation, you can root out a lot of that crap, right? If you are chasing cheap reach just to sort of satisfy procurement, then you're always going to have a problem with that, right? You're going to have to trade that off and change the sort of like the outcomes that some of these agencies are working towards.
Yeah. And I mean, we've heard from some, albeit they're premium publishers, right? So they're not in the business of MFA style, site curation and advertising. But we've heard from them this year about how they've really made some inroads into, like Lindsay mentioned, creating much more sophisticated monetization models and diversified monetization models. And once they wean themselves off, you know, various revenue associated with traffic, it becomes a much better experience all round. So I feel like that some of those MFA sites, as Lindsay said, have got an opportunity to become legitimate sites, because ultimately I feel like, and here we go, is a nice segue for you, Lindsay, I feel like everything around marketing and advertising is becoming more consumer sensitive, and consumers are becoming much more sensitive to the content that they're accessing, what it looks like and what the advertising experience on those sites are like. I think now more than ever, people understand what the value exchange is, right? I don't get this content for free. I've got to endure some advertising, but I really want to avoid those sites that have got the shitty slideshows and that just have got the reams and reams of advertising. They take a long time to load on my mobile phone, or if I'm in Asia and they chew up all my data, and, you know, I want to be able to save that data for watching telly because that's my only device that I do everything on, all of that sort of stuff. I just think is steering publishers away from that kind of revenue. And what I mean to say is that premium publishers have modeled that. I know they're in a completely different position to these long tail publishers, but I just feel like there are some ingredients at play at the moment that make it possible that these sites will diminish.
Yeah. I mean, don't underestimate the size of a long tail in this industry and the fact that they will still power a lot of the open marketplace for many years to come. But I do think you're right. And it does, you're right. I'll move to my prediction, and Ciaran, I'll jump you to last, because my very fluffy prediction is that it will be the year of the consumer, in that the consumer is a human being and it won't be called the consumer. And it is fluffy, but it does resonate with everything we've talked about so much across events and podcasts and videos across the year. And I read somewhere recently that 2023 was apparently the year of hyper fatigue. Everyone is just so bloody tired and so bloody pissed off with life that they're just kind of fed up with everything. And I think that will reflect how they consume media. Like, if you're just annoyed with stuff, you're going to go and find places and ways that you can de-stress. It could mean that we see a greater surge in certain forms of media. Like, I might be going and watching more cat videos to de-stress me, or I might be listening to more podcasts because that's a medium that I enjoy, which means we could see, you know, increase in podcast advertising, audio advertising. We could see an increase in kind of the quality of video advertising, but it will mean that as a consumer, as a person, we will be able to kind of actively say no and actively reject certain types of advertising that we disagree with. And that will show in the performance. If we aren't engaging with stuff, if we aren't giving our attention to things, then performance of those poor quality ads will hopefully reduce, because we have the power to say, I don't want that in my life. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. This is my data. This is the kind of ad that I want to see. And hopefully it'll be the human being at the end of the ad that will drive things. That's what we've been working to for many, many years. Maybe not every single one of those years, but we're certainly trying to the past couple of years. I think the 2024 will kind of see that kind of culminating into a place where the person at the end of the ad actually is king, which is what it should have been all along.
I think that's entirely possible, because I think we're already on that journey, right? Like you said, everything we've discussed throughout the year and some of the things we've just discussed today on the podcast is sort of heading in that direction. I just also think that consumers are so much more aware of what advertising on their mobile phones and on their laptops and in a digital environment means to them. And I feel as though that awareness has really increased significantly over the last couple of years. And, you know, there's a lot of momentum behind that, right? That, again, that together with privacy legislation and everything that's trying to control our advertising experience, I think all of that really draws everyone's attention much more back to the human element. And then on the other side, obviously, you've got brands and marketers and the audiences that they're trying to reach, and they're being backed into a corner where they need to start really communicating with their potential customers as human beings rather than as a volume play. So I think that really resonates with lots of things that are happening in the industry at the moment. Ciaran's always one to throw shade on, humanized predictions. Go on, Ciaran. Shoot us down.
Yeah, go on, I'm waiting for it. I knew I'd get this.
You're a consumer. Right.
He doesn't even know how to react.
Exactly.
I mean, are you specifically talking about like choice of sort of what you watch, what you consume? In the sense that people are sick of being bombarded with negative stories or divisive stories, or, you know, like
be that, definitely. There's that angle of it. So actually what I consume in terms of the stories I read, in terms of the podcasts I listen to, the videos I watch, et cetera, et cetera. But also in terms of how I react to advertising. I really do feel like there's going to be a step change in how people react to advertising.
Look, I think that this has been coming for a while. I'm just sort of like pushing your ideas into what, from a technical point of view. I mean, our ad experiences on most websites has been very poor. You know, chasing yield on websites has resulted in really, really poor advertised experiences. Like, so like a bucket load of ads on a site, too much outstream, too much, you know, pop-up video. I think if you take your point, Lindsay, and push it into like what the experience should be for publisher, for consumers on publisher sites, then it's a better ad experience, right? One beautiful creative can have a massive impact on that brand and that brand recall than 40 different ads on a page. And I feel that some websites have kind of have been very good at doing that over the years. I think The Guardian, in fairness to it, has been very, very good about how it presents its ads to the detriment of its bottom line in some cases in terms of the advertising revenue. But we're going to see more and more. I think you're going to get, it kind of goes back to the curation point. You're going to get more and more high yielding ads on pages, right? And that will improve the consumer experience. And I think that's what you're, I think, partly alluding to, right? It's just, you said at the beginning, the top of the show around your experience of watching, you know, CTE, where you're just seeing the same ad over and over again. Like that doesn't help advertisers. It doesn't help brands. And it certainly doesn't help you when you see this same ad over and over. Because, you know, weirdly, I quite like good advertising. I see, you know, TV ads are quite impressive.
That's not weird. That's not weird. That's a great thing that you like good advertising.
Exactly. And you're not alone, right?
I love a good ad.
When you're just thinking about like big sort of like communal watching experience, like a World Cup or Olympics, the ad should be like an experience. Like, you know what I mean? It should be like Super Bowl-esque type stuff. Like, you know what I mean? It should be an event. I think we've kind of all degraded the advertising experience for greater yield. And I think we're going to be coming back to that. You know, focus and creative and impact of creative.
Absolutely. And very quickly, Ciarán, I'm going to ask you for your final prediction of 2024, please. Drum roll.
I'm going to start.
My prediction is Ciarán's not going to make the buffet breakfast deadline.
I'll keep it quick. I think it relates to retail media. I think that there's a lot of hype around retail media. And what I'm seeing is that there's two camps emerging, right? There is sort of this walled garden camp, the Tesco's, Carrefour's, the world, right? That are operating effectively walled gardens around omnichannel points within their own ecosystem. So whether that's out of home or digital advertising, and they have teams out selling it, and then they resell their data outside of their walled garden. And then there is basically an aggregated pool of really signal-rich programmatic inventory. And having been around people this year, I get the sense that's what agencies really want, right? They want to be able to shift their TV spend into something really, really signal-rich, like so first-party data or intent. And I think you're going to see this kind of schism. And I've been telling ad tech people, like, don't focus on Tesco and Sainsbury's because they shouldn't open up. Like, if I was Tesco and Sainsbury's, I wouldn't be opening up my first-party data to third-party demand, because I think it's insane. They'll make so much money just operating. But from an agency's point of view, they can't manage 100 walled gardens that are just subscale, right? It's just not feasible. What is feasible is someone aggregating second-tier and third-tier publications, commerce sites, utility publishers, all those sort of media sites or commerce sites that don't really focus on content, right? It's just they're selling stuff effectively, selling a service or selling a product. And that's what agencies want, right? They don't want to be doing, you know, sort of like subscale buys across different buying points. Like we already have, and I think the other thing as well is we need to stop thinking as commerce media or retail media as a competitor to Amazon. It just isn't going to work. Amazon is too big. It's just like Google search. You can't out Amazon. It's a beast. So I think there'll be sort of a divergence of, if you will, into like walled garden. Your sort of like your brand name grocery stores will have their own walled gardens, and rightly so, because they've got rich data, they've got plenty of inventory, and they're obviously trying to manage or grow their trade spend. And then the bucket of new signal rich programmatic inventory that can be aggregated by the likes of, you know, Kevel or Pomatic or whoever, and then activated via a DSP. I actually think, weirdly enough, I think that could be the new open marketplace going forward, because
just as you're explaining that, I was just thinking about how you know when we were in Japan running ATS Tokyo a couple of weeks ago, that was fascinating. Totally different marketplace, doesn't really have an obvious retail media player because they don't have nationalized supermarket chains, so there isn't the big multi supermarket. Of course, there's the sort of walled garden utility environment or utility app environment that could be an opportunity for a retail media style network. But what would you do outside of that in an environment that doesn't necessarily, in a marketplace that doesn't necessarily have those big national retailers or other sorts of walled gardens?
Well, I think they just lean into the programmatic piece I talked about, the second part of it, right?
Yeah.
Think about it.
Okay.
I think that's where we're going to go next, because I've just seen the same narrative 2 years running, right? And it, you know, Walmart have managed to kind of build out a thing, but it's got some scale, but it's got way more scale than a Tesco's or Sainsbury's. And that's not me picking on Tesco or Sainsbury's, because their data is really good. dunnhumby's did a good job of monetizing and activating that data. I think that they would prefer to operate as walled gardens, and they should do, because they are looking, ultimately their goal is to sell more product, but at the same time sell more shelf space, because they want more trade spend, increase it digitally, right? And they've got, and remember, they've got out of home as well, right? They've got in-store out of home, which is incredibly valuable real estate, right? So they'll sell all that as a package. I just don't see how you get them to all get into, why don't we just aggregate all our inventory, standardize an ad unit and go for that. I just don't see it happening, right?
No, I don't
know. Where ad tech should be really focused is like, okay, we spent the better part of 15 years building up this programmatic infrastructure. Why not aggregate that supply in a second and third tier and make, and all, look, you talk to an agency and all they want is scale, right? They want to be able to scale. They want to say, a guy said to me from WPP, told me straight out, I want to be able to take my TV budget and put it here and activate it across this rich data. And I think that's coming. I know that Kevel have been sort of leading the charge in a new open RTB protocol for specifically for retail and commerce media around product listing advertising. And I think that's the way we're going to go. So that's my prediction. I think you're going to get these two different camps. And if I was an ad tech, I would be not concentrating on the Tesco's.
On the retailer.
Because if you try to herd them into an ozone thing, it'll be like herding cats. You won't be able, like, rightly so, Tesco and Sainsbury's aren't competitive, right? Why would they be pooling their inventory together when their ultimate goal is to outdo each other in grocery sales and taking trade spend?
Absolutely. Very good question. I'm going to wrap it up there, but I'm going to ask you both one final question. Are you optimistic? Are you bullish about 2024?
I am super excited about 2024. I do feel like, as you described at the beginning of the podcast, Lindsay, it has been a bit of a negative year. There's been a lot of dreariness throughout the year. I think even, you know, for us at Exchange, right, it's been a year of highs and lows. And
indeed.
I just think that I just think that everyone is ready for some more optimism next year. I think we're coming out of this sort of economic funk. That is not to say that there won't be economic challenges, but I feel like people are feeling a bit more confident about their economic positioning. It's a mixture of, well, you know, when haven't there been turbulent economic times since the pandemic? So perhaps we should just get on with it. And a mixture of a bit of optimism because markets seem to be stabilizing, you know, interest rates appear to be coming down. There seems to be more financial controls. We need to be reminded that there could be, you know, left field, variable, crazy things that could happen at any given point, because that's part of our industry and that's part of the world that we live in these days. But I think all of those things are more reasons for optimism rather than pessimism. And I think everyone's ready for it. And certainly I am.
100%.
I can't wait.
Kieran?
Yeah, so I am very, very optimistic about next year and the rest of the decade, right? So I've been trying to stop. There's a lot of negative people in the industry. There's just, I can't listen to them because I'm sitting there going, you work in an amazing industry, right? So you think about advertising is now a $1 trillion business globally, right? In Europe, it's probably about 200 billion, right? In Europe, in advertising, ad tech powers that. And every couple of years, ad tech just basically falls apart and rebuilds itself. So there's always a new opportunity in this industry, right? The rules remain the same, right? You know, build a product, get proof of concept, go to an agency, get a trade deal, scale, rinse and repeat, right? But every 4 or 5 years, there's a collapse, right? So now we have one of the biggest opportunities in the history of the industry to rebuild, from the ground up, right? We've lost
off the back of cookie deprecation.
Cookie deprecation and privacy, right? They've completely changed the total landscape. Mm. And we're leaning into new stuff like, you know, attention and all these sort of new signals that are going to help us sort of like build really, really interesting businesses. And I think that think about this one, right? Everybody's all about, oh, Amazon and Meta and Google are taking 80% of the spend. Right, fine. Okay, that's a given, right? That's the way it is. But the agencies and advertisers, well, advertisers particularly, will say, we are not giving 100% of our spend to Google Meta. 200 billion in European advertising spend. That's nearly 40 billion out there, right? For the 20%ers. That's not an insignificant amount of money. That's a pretty big chunk of cash. So I think we need to take a sort of like a hard look and say, like, there's huge opportunity. Like, and if I was, you know, out in the wilds now and unemployed, I would seriously think about starting an ad network around P&P stuff. I think there's a big opportunity there. It just takes a little bit of bravery and a bit of madness to do it. Like, but that's ad tech, really. Bravery and madness.
What a way to end. Never underestimate the ability in our industry to innovate. There's plenty of it, and 2024 there'll be no shortage of innovation. On that note, I want to end it. Thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you, Kieran, for joining me and sharing your predictions 2024. And a big thank you to our listeners of the MadTech podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continued listenership. We wish you at Exchange Wire a very happy Christmas, happy holidays, and a fantastic new year. This has been the MadTech Podcast. Thank you for listening.